Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Bernard Courtois, President and CEO of ITAC, the Information Technology Association of Canada. Bernard brings a long history of successes as a top-ranking business and technology leader. Bernard, thank you for coming in today to share your deep insights with the audience.
Happy to do this, Steve.
So from an ITAC and personal perspective, what do you hope to achieve in 2009?
Well, I think people won't be surprised that at this time we're all conscious about the state of the economy and what's happening in the U.S. economy and at a few other places in the world where the financial institutions are a little bit rocky, and that's going to cause an economic slowdown that we all have to be conscious of. So my priorities, the priorities of ITAC for the coming year, are to navigate through that period and make sure that we as an industry and the public policymakers don't take their eye off the ball of the longer-term issues that are essential to our future prosperity and success.
So can you drill down further then into what you see as the forecast for the economic situation in 2009 and then the next few years?
Well, there's going to be what everybody says, an economic slowdown, actually a recession most likely in a number of economies. And for us, being in Canada, you know, the U.S. economy in particular has a big effect on us. What's happening from our perspective is that Canada is not in as serious a shape as the U.S. The U.S. is living through years of accumulated economic policies that are, you know, that have been causing trouble, massive deficits and so on, plus the shakeout in their financial system, which is not happening in Canada. Our financial system is in much better shape. What's going to happen, therefore, is Canada is not going to do as bad as the U.S. The other significant thing is the ICT industry is not going to do as bad as the rest of the economy.
So that gets, you know, I was sort of wanted to get sort of a closer look into that. So you're really saying then that it's going to have a depressive effect overall, though not as big as the U.S., but the impact in the technology sector won't be as bad. Are there any specific sectors where you feel there will be a greater impact than others?
Well, I think we have to be conscious of the fact that a slowdown in the economy slows down demand generally, and that applies to the ICT industry as well. However, in this day and age, our products and services have become basic essentials, both for people's lives personally and for corporations and governments and organizations. In other words, we're a necessity. You cannot do without these products nowadays. However, obviously, if you're providing products and services to financial institutions that are getting gobbled up or have to shut down or have to really cut back their activities, and generally speaking throughout the economy, that's going to have some negative effect. Nonetheless, as I say, they still need our products. The other thing is, if you're doing mergers, if companies are getting bought out so that they can survive, there's actually, and also if people are adapting to a slower economy, there is some extra need for information and communications technology products and services to handle those adjustments, and therefore it actually causes some positive impact on the demand. So while the overall picture is more negative, there are some positives, particularly in systems that have to be changed and integrated, in consulting so that people bring different systems together or retool their operations to become more competitive and live through these tougher times. So generally speaking, there are some positives out there in a situation like that. But the other thing is that the ICT industry will continue to do better than the rest of the economy.
So we have these different vendors and industry players that are out there, but there's also the practitioners. What impact will this economic situation have on the IT practitioner in 2009 and beyond?
Well, I think there's a trend that's been building over the years for the practitioner and what skills are going to be required and what's going to be in demand There is still value in the technical competency that's needed to do all this work and keep the lights on and keep systems running. But there's a shift taking place to the need for more business expertise, so that the technical practitioner becomes a business advisor, becomes integrated in the business decision-making process, whether it's a commercial business or a government business. What we're seeing as a trend, and that will continue to be the case when we have significant economic adjustment taking place, the practitioner has the technical expertise to be able to say, if you did this differently, or if you changed the way we do things, or if you use technology in the following way, you can actually help address your business imperatives. And that's going to continue to be the case, and it becomes quite critical in a period of economic turbulence.
So what I'm hearing then is that you're suggesting that the IT practitioner in the future will have more of a business and core industry knowledge and more of a service-oriented attitude, sort of this focus on the customer and user experience and the ability to integrate their technical competencies with the business side and advise the business side and work with the business side.
Yes, I think the IT practitioner has to become more conscious of the environment within which his or her services are being provided, or the technical work is being done, so that the organization can better get the benefit of their thinking and expertise on how to address the fundamental issues facing the organization, as opposed to remaining focused only on the technical aspects.
That means then that the purely technically focused person who has perhaps some industry certification will have to undergo some skills development and to get on the broader business side, the relationship and communication side.
That's always part of the real professional. You have to keep adapting your skills on a pure technical basis to the technological changes taking place, but you also, if you want to go up in the organization, and if you want to maximize the contribution you can make and therefore what you will get in return, then you have to be more conscious of the priorities and challenges facing the organization and make your contribution to addressing that, as opposed to simply the technical and technological things that you bring to the table.
No, from a technical perspective, what do you see as the highest demand areas in 2009 for the IT practitioner?
Well, I think we're going to be in a period of change management, and therefore I'm not going to respond here by saying exactly what technical skills. There are people better qualified than me to adjust the demand forecast for exactly what technical skills are needed, whether it's certain type of programmer or network management, IP versus other kinds of communications, etc. Wireless obviously is a growing area, and I think we're going more to the integration across different kinds of devices and networks, etc. But I think the basic trend, when you see what's happening in the industry, is it's we're going to be undergoing changes because of organizations trying to adapt to wrenching economic change, and we're also going to be having to adapt to a skill shortage that is going to remain pervasive throughout the economy. So one of the big things that's happening is, when you have an economic slowdown, you take a lot of the pressure off the shortage of people and the shortage of skills, but it would be extremely dangerous to take our eye off the ball on that one. And when the economy returns, as it no doubt will, we will have had to do our thinking during the present time so that we are equipped for it.
So we have a situation that's happening globally, and we've sort of discussed this to a certain point. So how do you see the technology landscape building here in Canada as compared to the rest of the world?
Well, I think that we know that the economy is becoming more global. Our own technology has actually enabled that, and therefore our industry is as global as it can be, and it's enabling other industries to be more easily global. that phenomenon will continue, and it's causing fundamental economic change throughout the world. We have seen the rise of major developing economies like China, like India, like Russia, like Brazil. And from that, we have to be, as Canadians, look to those markets to sell our products and services to, because people think of it as maybe jobs going over there, but it's actually a big opportunity in two ways. We have to continue to operate by using the capabilities and the lower cost of those countries in our supply chain and our value chain, and find the right place for Canada, which is in the higher value activities, and using those capabilities for our corporations to maintain their market share and grow. At the same time, our industry is having a tremendous economic impact, contributing to the rise of those economies. That is also making the cost advantage in those economies to become less and less. So their lower cost advantage is eroding very quickly. If you have places where average salaries are going up 10 to 15% a year, 10% more than inflation, that's more than what's happening in our country, and you just need to do the arithmetic to see that in 10 years or 20 years, they will have eroded their cost advantage, and they will also have to move up the value chain. At the same time, however, those economies are going to become enormous markets, and the people in the commercial world have to be conscious of that, and we have to make sure Canada's a trading nation. We have a small market, a small economy. It is extremely important for us to seize the economic opportunities that exist and will keep growing in those economies.
So what I'm hearing then is that we need to continually outreach to these emerging economies, because they are really the future of our products and services and our talent.
That's correct. They will be the future in terms of markets, and they're the future in terms of contributing to the competitiveness of our own products and services.
And I guess you mentioned what we call the BRIC countries, the Brazil, Russia, India, and China. Something else.
Yes.
So something else that I'm very much interested in, and you know, you have the situation where you have the World Economic Forum or the Economist Intelligence Unit or the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, where, let's say, you know, 10 years ago or 5 years ago, we were ranked in the single digits in terms of our use of technologies and different areas of our economy. And currently, we're ranked in the double digits. In other words, we've fallen quite a bit from first place or second or fourth place to 13th place or 14th place or 12th place. Do you see that changing in the future?
Well, at ITAC, we've been doing a lot of work on that, and we have identified the areas where Canada needs to work to improve its position relative to its peers and other competitors around the world, and they are the fundamentals of a knowledge economy. Our entire economy is becoming a knowledge economy. So our future success, even in natural resources, is not going to be based on simply ripping things out of the ground. It's going to be based on doing it with better technology to get better yields, better productivity, to address environmental concerns, and so on. And hopefully we will then build an expertise that we can use to then generate some revenue flows from around the world. So the elements for success in the knowledge economy are first and foremost a skilled workforce. And we are pretty good at that, but we know what our shortages are. We know that we have the most educated population across all of the OECD, the 32 countries in the OECD. But we know that we need to do better in terms of the very advanced end, the post-secondary, the post-first or second degree and the advanced degrees. We need to do better in the mix of business skills with technical skills, and we need to do better in terms at the more junior level than the job scale to continue to best adapt the people that come out of the college system, for example, and meet the technical needs of the economy. And we also need to improve enrollment of children into the educational paths that can lead to careers that can be both technology and business. We know that we need to continue to look at our taxes to make sure they're competitive. We've made huge strides there. We know exactly what needs to be addressed to finish the job. We need, as a country, to continue to invest in technology because that's the base of everything in the future. And we need to make our whole economy more conscious of the need to be innovative and use technology. And in many of the world rankings, where we've been slipping is in this area of innovation. Our Canadian businesses, particularly mid-size, do not use technology as much as a comparable business in the U.S. to change the way they do business. We need to address that. Our governments have been leaders in e-government, but that leadership is eroding, so we have to have a renewed drive in our governments to be world leaders because e-government is the future and how to better serve the population on a more cost-effective basis. So all those things are things that where we're not doing badly, we know what we need to do to improve, and as a nation, we need to focus on that. And luckily enough, there's a fair amount of discussion among policymakers, a fair amount of recognition that we have to be, our future is going to be based on technology, it's going to be based on innovation, it's going to be based on a much more intense pursuit of competitiveness and our competitive net rankings.
So I guess this also talks about some of the specific projects that ITAC is working on. I know that one of your major programs from an education standpoint was to try to message to that audience in some way, working with provincial governments and so forth, to bring more of sort of a passion and excitement in the educational sector. Can you tell us more about your work in that area?
Yes, we've done a lot of work in that as well, and it's everybody in our industry has become quite sensitive to this issue about enrollments. There's no doubt that the future of our industry, and it's the future of the whole economy, because we have not only our industry that we affect, but our IT practitioners affect the performance of the entire economy. We need three things. We need more children into the streams that can then feed the needs of our industry and our practitioners, and more technology. We need more focus and more effective immigration so that immigration does its part to add to these skills. And we will need to retrain or realign a lot of people, so there'll be some retraining of the existing workforce, there'll be immigration, and there's more throughput through the educational system. Now, the throughput through the educational system, what we found is there are lots of programs out there to encourage young people to take science and technology, to take educational streams that lead into technology careers, to explain to kids in high school what today's technology jobs are, how they can be more fun, more exciting than what they may have been told or taught they were. And what we find is all those programs do not seem to be having the desired effect of a sea change in the educational stream choices and career choices of children. So what we're doing at ITAC is we're pulling together an inventory of all these programs that exist so that we can find out from that inventory where are the missing points, where are the missing activities, what is it that we need to do to complete the picture and have desired effect. Also, what we find is we need someone, and it's our industry, it's a logical place to go that it be ITAC that do that, look at an overall strategy to fill our needs and manage that strategy so that we make sure that we get there from here, as opposed to simply launching a bunch of ideas and letting things happen and hopefully we'll get there. So there are two things we're doing, an inventory, and then the other thing is a strategy and quarterbacking a strategy so that we can get results.
You also talked about tax policies and additional government sort of being part of this process. Is ITAC working closely with government to try to make these things happen?
Yes, we made our submission to the Competition Policy Review Panel that reported to the government in the spring, and we're looking forward to the period after this election so that the government can then put together a competitiveness strategy. It's the same thing as on the talent and skill shortage. We have to address all of the key levers that can improve our competitive position, and we have to have someone who oversees that strategy and keeps an eye on it to make sure that we're getting there from here. So we've been quite involved in discussions with government on this, in addition to making our submissions. We have posted on the ITAC website, if you'll see a banner that changes, a very short piece that we've distributed to the political leaders to see what we'll get that comes out that pertains to the priorities that a knowledge economy requires. And after the election, we will be pursuing this quite intensely. We've also been discussing these issues with provincial governments, and we're very happy to see that a number of provincial governments are putting together the right industrial strategy to succeed in this day and age, whether it's the Quebec government, the Ontario government, the Alberta government, the BC government. So we're trying to keep a hand in all those things to drive what we believe is, if our economy is driven to succeed in today's world of a knowledge economy, then our industry will succeed and our industry will be driven to make its contribution.
Bernard, we're at the close of the interview. Are there additional comments that you want to make, or additional background in terms of some of your solutions, or any added items about the future?
Two things I want to raise, because they're big blind spots in the discussions taking place in our industry and in public policy. One is the shortage of skills we have in the ICT industry and in the ICT capability in the economy is exacerbated in the healthcare side. So our healthcare system, its future sustainability and performance is entirely dependent on a big step up in the use of technology. And we have a shortage of skills in ICT and healthcare at the moment. It's going to get much, much worse and become much more intense. And addressing this is going to be essential to the future performance of our healthcare system. Luckily enough, that's an area where we feel kids should be drawn to naturally in terms of exciting, interesting careers where they will feel they will make a contribution to society. The other blind spot I will mention is that while we have an economic slowdown, there is no doubt that all developed economies, and even economies like China, are going to be running short of skilled people. China can absorb that because it's got hundreds of millions of people they can draw in from rural areas. But the developed economies are all going to be short of people and short of skilled people. Many people in our economy, businesses and governments, are all trying to pursue strategies to get all the employees they need. For example, in terms of retirements and demographic growth, they're all developing strategies to fight for the same limited number of people to fill jobs where we're going to have more jobs to fill than there are people to fill them. We're developing a huge blind spot, just like in the 1990s. In order to save money in the healthcare system, we put a lot of nurses into retirement, only to discover that we were going to be short of nurses anyways after that, and it was an awful move to make. What has not dawned on people is there are not going to be enough people, so we have to develop another layer of strategy, which is how can we achieve what our business and our government operation needs to do with fewer people. I know the Quebec government, for example, is developing an approach that they would like to try and replace two retirees with one new hire. And throughout the economy, we're going to have to develop that kind of strategy. And if we think about it ahead of time, then we can change the way we can automate more things, we can streamline more of our work, we can outsource more work so that a pool of skilled professionals can serve multiple clients as opposed to one. The Japanese, for example, have realized that with their aging population, they will need to take care of those people in their homes better. It's a society that does not want to bring in a whole lot of immigrants, so they've really realized what they were facing, and they've developed a robotics strategy where they're developing robots to really take care of people for much longer in their lives in their homes. So they're doing something that is going to then position them very well in the robotics field, is going to address their social problem, but the light has gone on about the fact that we're going to be short of people. Our economy in Canada and in the U.S. and in Europe, the light has to turn on the same way. We have to be able to do the same things and even maintain economic growth with fewer people. And that is going to cause a significant change in the strategies, our national strategies, our government operations strategies, our business strategies. That's a big, big blind spot that we have to realize and we have to overcome.
Bernard, are there any upcoming forums that ITAC is organizing to bring this to a bigger dialogue and to ensure that Canadians are aware of some of the critical issues ahead?
At the moment, we have not we don't have events planned on specifically that issue. We continue to do like everyone else, and we have forums where we discuss the needs of our industry. We discuss almost business as usual. And we ourselves, therefore, are thinking about what do we need to do now to get this word out, because it's something that's fundamental throughout the economy. So at the moment, we don't have events planned on that because it has dawned on us just recently, but we know we'll have to do something about it. But it's important to begin to throw the idea out so that people begin to think about it.
But you do have human resource foremen, don't you? Human resources foremen, forums, I should say.
That's right. We have a human resources forum that we can take to take this to. These are the human resources professionals, and therefore we will start discussing that there. This issue needs to be handled, however, at the level of CEOs and at the level of the people who make the fundamental decisions in the economy. The HR professionals are going to have to raise this issue inside their organization, but we have to be sure that we're sensitizing the people who make the fundamental strategic decisions in corporations. So we're going to have to work at that level as well. So our talent committee is going to be addressing this issue as well, and our board of directors, and we're going to raise it in our discussions with government at the ministerial level and the senior bureaucratic level so that people begin to realize this before it's too late.
Bernard, this has been a really telling dialogue with you today. You brought up some very critical issues that the Canadian audience and even really the global audience needs to be aware of. So I very much thank you for taking the time to share your deep wisdom and insights with the audience. And we will continue to follow ITAC and your work with keen interest, really because it has a global and historical and Canadian impact.
Thank you, Stephen. It's been a pleasure, and I know that these interviews and the coverage you give them are really helpful to our industry and the professionals in our industry. So thank you.